Hello, and you are listening to FPcast, the podcast for Fruitless Pursuits where we bullshit about the week in pop culture. I'm Luke.
And I'm Jacinta.
And this week we're talking about...
Great ones.
Really great walls.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about walls in the last couple of weeks, months.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And here is a fine example of how to do a really, really good one.
Yes.
A great one.
Yes. The best one, even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at the moment.
How long is the Great Wall of China? It's pretty long, right?
It's very, very long.
Very, very long.
I can't give you a number, but I can say very long.
It took about 1,700 years to build.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like we were only treated to a very small section of it. I feel like it was designed to keep things out, but there was pretty much a thoroughfare from where the things were coming from to a very small, specific part of that wall. But if you want to make a statement, if you want your wall to be truly great, having it all big winding around like that, I think it was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of people could learn from that and maybe take some building tips moving forward.
Absolutely.
Chinese
ingenuity.
That is right.
I don't know what I said.
Let's hit a Trump
button. I don't remember.
You said you were going to build a wall, pal.
Hasn't done it yet.
A great one. Yeah, where's the wall? 4 weeks.
Oh, I know. Like,
I would expect to see something by now.
Absolutely. What a terrible president.
All those people leaking in.
Okay. Yes, yes. I didn't realise what you said. It was leaking. I didn't get leaking at first. And I was like, what did you say?
Well, speaking of leaking, here's a segue. We've got a little bit of a news story today. Of course, our feature, we're reviewing The Great Wall. We're very excited to talk about that. We're going to get there. There's some news first. Tom Hiddleston.
Yes.
Someone we like to talk about on this show.
Yeah. So he didn't have a great 2016. He was made fun of quite a lot for... Firstly, I guess the Hiddle Swift thing. He was going out with Taylor Swift for only about 3 months. It felt much longer than that.
And it felt a little bit dodgy. Felt a little bit fake relationship news.
Yes, it did. And then towards the end of the year, he got an award for Night Manager. And he, in part of his speech, he rambled on basically about how he was a UNICEF kind of ambassador and talked about that for way too long. And it sounded a lot like... you know, look at me, I'm great, I do charity work. And he was very, people made a lot of fun of him, he was very embarrassed about it, and he said, look, I'm really sorry, I just kind of got caught up in the moment and said a stupid thing, and I'm very sorry. So he didn't have a great year last year.
Seems like he's having difficulty sort of with his image, like trying to decide what he's putting forward. Am I a serious person? Am I not? Am I a heterosexual person? Am I not? Do I love T.S.? Or do I not? Am I like a Bond type? Am I an intellectual type? Am I like a activist type? Yeah.
He's trying to put on a lot of hats and they're not all fitting.
No. No.
But he's promoting the... And when's it supposed to come out? Skull Island. Not too long.
Oh, a couple of weeks, I believe. Yeah, I believe we're seeing it reasonably soon.
Yeah. So he's... talking about that at the moment, doing the talk show rounds, and a story came out from when he was filming The Night Manager in Mallorca, I think the story said.
Yeah, and this story came out on Graham Norton. We haven't had access to the episode yet. We haven't got the actual audio, but rest assured, I'm putting a bounty on this audio. I would like this audio to be part of our soundboard, along with such classics as...
That was the most magnificent, wonderful, beaut piece of steak I've ever eaten, and it was
so tender.
It was the most tender. Yeah, I was wondering how you're going to work that one in today.
Yeah, just straight off the bat, just 4 minutes in, I just pressed the button.
So the story goes that his co-star Tom Hollander, not Tom Holland, not Little Baby Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Man.
Tom Hollander.
Because that would add an even other element to this.
Yeah, very, yes, very, very young boy. It was at the beach, got stung by a jellyfish. And what's the first thing that you think of as far as treating a jellyfish sting?
You got to piss on it.
You have to piss on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Tom Hollander goes, hey, Tom Hiddleston, can you come and piss on my leg? And Hiddleston's like, oh, fuck, sure. Okay, so he pissed on this guy's leg. And then he told another story of how he at when he was at private boarding school, because he went to a posh school, he got teased and got called Hiddle Piddle.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep, yep, yep. So this whole sort of piss thing, much like with Trump, has been kind of following him around.
Mm.
This idea that he is in some way...
He's a piddler.
A serial urinator.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that factored into the Taylor Swift thing.
Well...
Like, maybe that is why things broke up.
Well, we will so find quickly. Out on the next album, I imagine.
I would like to check Tom Hiddleston's wardrobe, or at least have some sort of verified committee given the power to go and do that, to check his white tank tops, to see if any of them say, like, I pissed on Taylor Swift, for example. I would like to know that. I think there should be some kind of... Well, why not a royal commission?
Mm.
We're talking about the UK.
Absolutely. The Queen will personally go around and look at his tank tops.
Give it the Taylor Swift sniff test. that could be done. Mm. While talking about this relentless teasing about his pissing that he had, and this is the bit of audio that I've got the bounty on, he apparently claimed that they would say such things as, "Hiddle piddle, did a whittle." In the middle of the night.
They were accusing him of bedwetting.
That is your entertainment news today. Mm. That's the smoking gun. That's the story.
Mm.
Hiddle piddle apparently did a whittle in the middle of the night.
Yeah, if he doesn't want, like, embarrassing shit stuck to him for the, you know, this year, maybe, then maybe giving people a quotable line like that is not the way to go.
And he said his friends still call him Pid, although it's affectionate.
Yes.
And that makes me wonder if he gave Taylor Swift PID.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Mm. There's something to think about.
I would keep an eye out for I gave Taylor Swift PID in the tank tops when the Royal Commission going over them with a fine tank top comb.
Yeah. It'll probably be in some locked away, like, special... the back of the closet. You have to, like, press a panel and like it all comes out. Yeah. Yeah.
And you go, oh, okay.
Here's the library of tank tops.
Yeah, because I feel like he's sort of like Wile E. Coyote in that way. You know how Wile E. Coyote holds up a sign to show what he's thinking at any given moment? Mm-hmm. I feel like Hiddleston has a range of tank tops, which he gets specially printed. At some sort of, like, Jersey Shore style t-shirt printing on the fly place where you can go in and go, can I have a pair of hot pants that say Hiddle Piddle on the front or on the back, and then Whittle with an arrow on the front?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. Well,
that I can wear in the middle of the night?
He wears suits so often that we just don't know what he's wearing underneath those.
It probably is something very, very revealing about himself. And it's funny because along with Hiddleston, the other British actor we like to talk about is Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm. Well, like to talk about. Mm.
Well, you're kind of compelled to sometimes in the way that, you know, people are compelled to tell us that lizard people have invaded our society.
Well, yeah. It's important to be informed.
And gained positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
Such as being Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes.
Or playing Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe. He's a very mysterious aquatic character. And what I found interesting was when I was looking up who Tom Hollander was, I found a story of Tom Hollander getting abused in a way by Benedict Cumberbatch as well. So this guy is
he gets around.
Yeah, he's a magnet for this sort of trouble.
Yeah, right.
And his story was that he was filming The Jungle Book. Now, not The Jungle Book that we saw and loved with the Disney one. Andy Serkis is also directing a motion capture Jungle Book, which after the success of the Disney one, I imagine is a pretty tricky and confusing prospect for audiences. I don't know what they're getting. They're going to have to call it something else, right? Like the Jungle
Story.
Story, film, something like that. In this version, Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Shere Khan.
Okay.
And Tom Hollander is a hyena.
Okay.
And he gets scratched, and he said that...
Wait, he's a hyena in The Jungle Book.
Yes.
Which is set in India.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
should be called the Jungle Wikipedia, right? Because everybody's sure. just throwing in for stuff without getting checked.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing who's playing the kangaroo in the Jungle Book.
Well, if it's not Wer, though, I'll be having a fucking hiddle piddle in the middle of the night.
What about little fucking Wenno? And he's like,
he can be a Joey.
Mowgli, what you doing?
I'm a koala hanging from a tree. Look out for that snake, Mowgli mate. So he got scratched, and Tom Hiddleston, and we know this from Smaug, because millions of squealing women in the cinema every time the trailer for The Desolation of Smaug came on. Mm. It was really like a desolation of their pants, because his voice was just so powerful.
So overpowering.
And compelling. Yeah. And you knew that even though, like, Smaug was a dragon and everyone pretty much animated him from scratch, because Benedict is such a method actor, they allowed him to get out there in his sweatpants and walk around on all fours.
Mm. And they pretended to film him.
On a pile. Yeah. There's no, you know, they were already doing 48 frames a second. They weren't going to waste that.
They were just doing it for lulzies.
But they did it to humour him. It was part of his process. He brought in his own pile of gold because he's British royalty.
Yeah.
And he crawled around on that and was, I'm a dragon. Rawr, 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 and did all that. So you know that he gets really into these motion capture roles.
Yep.
He loves that. Mm. And so when Tom Hollander got a scratch on his bot, Benedict Cumberbatch, realizing what Shere Khan would do, injured animal, gave him a little bit of a lick on the bum.
He licked his bum.
Gave him a little bit of a rimmy to cheer him up.
Now, I don't know any person in my life whose bum I would lick if they had a scratch on it.
Mm.
What are you doing, Benedict?
Well, he's being a tiger. So you're thinking as Jacinta the human.
Okay.
He's thinking as Shere Khan the tiger.
Okay.
And Shere Khan the tiger, as Rudyard Kipling often said in the book, would get his tongue right in there.
Yeah, because Shere Khan's a nice guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's such a nice guy. He would just be licking everybody's wounds.
He doesn't like humans, but he's not afraid with a hyena. Hyenas are evil animals. Animals are...
just like in The Lion King, very evil.
Yeah, some animals are good, some animals are evil. And this goes back to original sin. This is all Eve, women problems, basically. Because other than that, animals before that.
Yeah.
Because I've sometimes, like, read the Creation magazine.
Okay.
And what I realize is, like, animals were generally pretty good to each other. They were, like, high-fiving and stuff. And then original sin happens. Uh-oh, woman can't do what she was asked to do, follow simple instructions. And then suddenly the scorpion goes, oh, now I've got a sting on my tail, and I'm not afraid to use it, motherfuckers. And it's like, well, okay.
So the snake, fine. So the snake is on team bad, and half the animals decide to join the snake on team bad, and the other half decide to stay on the side of good.
They pick teams, and they flipped a coin, and then they chose.
Okay.
Which one? It was a homemade coin.
Okay.
There was no need for currency until then.
But there's some fence sitters, right? Though. Because cats are definitely fence sitters.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're double agents.
They decide on each given day what they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some good, some evil. Tigers, though, like to get in that coin. Basically.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to take one thing from this story. It's that tigers love coit.
Love coit. It's that Cure song, Love Coit. Was just about that.
Yep.
Robert Smith knew all about this, obviously, because he read the Bible religiously. And, they love coit. They've got those bumpy tongues. Some people have a date with destiny. Some people have a date with a date.
And, have their destiny with a date.
And Hollander here.
Yep.
Here's a guy. He's had it from Hiddleston. He's been pissed on by Hiddleston and had his bum licked by Benedict Cumberbatch. So,
like, who's next?
What's next? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Martin Freeman going to shit on his face?
Dame Judi Dench, I'm looking at you. Maggie Smith.
Oh, my goodness.
Maggie Smith.
She's going to spit in his mouth.
Going to shit on his tits. You heard it here first. All right. You can tell we don't have a huge amount of news. Something I just want to bring up, this is visual, but I posted the picture on our Facebook group, but the episode's 8 Last Jedi packaging template was revealed. This was part of the press release for Force Friday, which is the day that the episode 8 toys will go on sale and a lot of characters will be revealed. That is September 1st this year, which is pretty exciting, getting closer and closer each time. And the packaging shows Rey in the foreground, her face, and then Poe and Finn on either side, which is very cool. Our three favourite characters, the holy trinity of Star Wars new.
I mean, I find it very offensive that they have hidden Poe's glorious hair under a helmet, but obviously I understand why that choice was made.
I think they're really trying to push for that helmet to be iconic, because I believe they're bringing out one of those Black Series, like, replica helmets of that, which is going to be pretty cool.
Interesting.
It is a good helmet. Finn is wearing pretty much the same jacket, except it doesn't have the sort of burgundy shoulders anymore. It looks more brown.
Okay. And he's wearing a white shirt underneath.
Looks like a white Han Solo style
shirt. A lot of people are saying, oh, it looks like the white Jedi shirt. I'm like, no, I think it's just a fucking white shirt.
I think it was pretty cleared up that he wasn't a Jedi in the last one.
Yeah. I'm and like, that, guys, fucking not everyone's a Jedi. Let's just relax. He didn't
have any Force stuff happening at all.
Yeah. The first image that I saw was the one that you'd sent me, which is kind of from an angle, so it's kind of more towards the Finn side of the box, and you can't see Poe very clearly. But, like, when I was looking at it, it looked like he was wearing the jacket too. He had the jacket on and the helmet. I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. That... And then I saw it, the proper image front on, and he is wearing his normal flight suit, but it is, like, really kind of brown.
I thought it was quite orange. Maybe it's just dirty.
Yeah. I think it's just the colour palette they've gone.
It's going to be some dirty work happening in there.
I hope so.
And then there's Rey, bless her, looking fucking awesome as a Jedi with the lightsaber out. She's got new hair.
Well,
it's half up, half down.
Yeah,
now.
People are going, oh my God, her hair is longer. And I'm like, no, it's just down now.
It's down.
Like, it's the same fucking hair.
It means she means business.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I mean, I don't know. When Qui-Gon had his hair like that, he got cut in half, didn't he?
Well, she might get cut in half. Like, I hope not.
Oh, no, he didn't get cut in half. Maul got cut in half.
That's true.
But he stabbed Qui-Gon before getting cut
in half. He did.
So she might get stabbed like Qui-Gon. That'd be a shame.
I want to stab you like Qui-Gon, girl. Could be. And she's wearing, you can't really see, it looks like a dark tunic with then the sort of Jedi-coloured robe over the top, but still sleeveless with the arm wraps. There was a leak of, like, a very blurry picture of a Hallmark ornament for later this year for Christmas, which seems to show her in some kind of like battle tunic thing, and she looks cool. So I really can't imagine that they're going to risk people going, where's Rey? There's no Rey merchandise this year. I imagine it's just going to be full on now that she's been revealed as a Force user. So very much looking forward to that. And it's not on our list to talk about, but of course we have to update everybody on the Star Wars quiz night that we went to during the week.
Yep.
We had our sights set on crushing this thing, on winning.
Yes.
7 rounds, 10 questions on each of the 7 episodes. And it was a bit of a schmozzle. We came out pretty poorly at the end.
Yeah.
Poor showing.
At halfway point, we were like 5th or something.
And I think even then we were only about 4 points off the lead.
Yeah, we felt like we were in a good position. The second half of the quiz was going to be all... you know, the new, like the original movies and Force Awakens. We thought we were going to do pretty well with those. We fucked up.
Yeah, I have it. We did.
We
I mean,
did
that,
badly.
That's the short story. We didn't do terribly, but I still think...
Oh, I think we did pretty... We came like 3rd last, dude.
No, I know, but yes. But I don't think there was a big range between everybody, basically.
It was a couple of points separating everyone, but still.
And the issue for me was that it needed to be 70 obscure questions. And then you would really weed out who, on average, knew stuff. And but it was 70% really easy bullshit that everybody knew, which meant you couldn't get a lead. Like, I know my characters. I know my Wilro Hoods and my Sayel Marais and all that sort of stuff. They put up Empire Strikes Back. They've only got 10 questions. They put up a picture of Lando and go, which character is this? It's like, how can you fucking bridge the gap?
Yeah. And I think I don't want to hang shit on these organisers, but I feel like some of their questions and answers were not completely accurate. They asked the, like the city that Jar Jar Binks was from, right? And the answer that they said was correct was Gungan, which it is not Gungan. They call it the Gungan City because that's where the Gungans live, but the Gungan City is actually called Otagunga.
Yeah. And I think some of them were vague too.
Well, yeah, but even then, they like that's the wrong answer. Like when they gave people the... They dicked us wrong for having the right answer.
When they said, you know, where did Leia and Han and everything hide when they escaped the Empire in...
Some of the questions are really badly worded.
And it's like, do you mean when they went into the asteroid field? Do you mean when they were clinging to the Millennium Falcon was clinging to the side of the Star Destroyer? Do you mean when they left and went to Bespin? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? Which one?
And there was one that was like, where do Anakin and Padme set out from to rescue Obi-Wan? Set out from to rescue Obi-Wan from or something. And people are going, do you want to know where they left from or where they went to rescue Obi-Wan?
That said, the actual venue and everything, I thought was absolutely fantastic. Like
it was. The screen and everything was really clear. Everyone could see everything. It was really good.
The people, like, was table service.
Yes.
Getting lots of drinks by people dressed as Princess Leia. And the menu was all Star Wars themed. I had a black Death Star burger. Mm. There was things like Ewokamole. And Nacho's father, something or other. it was really good. They put it together really nicely. So, look, the prizes weren't anything special. We didn't miss out that much. We didn't get the Eth Koth serviettes or the Jocastinu sandwich maker or whatever they were giving away.
No, it was like the first prize was like fucking Star Wars Monopoly and some...
Trivial Pursuit.
Was it?
I think it was it.
No, it was Monopoly.
Really?
I'm very sure that it was.
I thought it was Trivial Pursuit, and I was going to say, what a fucking gift to give to the winners, because then they're going to sit around and go, okay, let's play our prize, and the first person's going to just win.
Yep.
And not get anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Because those games as well, the Trivial Pursuit, they always piss me off that, like, the answer to each question is, like, Darth Vader or Luke or Obi-Wan or R2-D2 or C-3PO. There's no obscure characters in those things, hardly ever. Or, like, obscure is considered to be, like, Admiral Akbar, as opposed to... Depa Bilaba or somebody crazy like that. So, Yuriel Puff.
Yuriel Puff.
Yuriel Puff! This is amazing. So that was that. We didn't win Don't Ever Talk to Us About It Again. Although Simon, friend of the podcast, won fair and by a landslide.
Oh, absolutely.
Won the costume competition, dressed as Porkins, handmade costume. Attention to detail, just absolutely amazing.
Yep, smashed
Huge cheers from the crowd. It was very fun to see that the organisers who didn't know much about Star Wars didn't know it was Porkins and were avoiding saying who he was. but we were loving it. He was fantastic.
Really good.
A couple of other little bits of news before we get into our feature review. Mel Gibson apparently being courted to direct Suicide 2. Weird one.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the last thing we saw him do was Hacksaw Ridge, which, you know, cinematography, fantastic. He was a very good director in that.
Well, beyond being a controversial character, the thing is, he is a really good director and he's somebody that makes films that are generally quite important. Mm. So it sort of seems really beneath him unless he's trying to do something mainstream to kind of come back. But then again, like Suicide Squad... pissed off not just the audience but the cast, so it's kind of hard to imagine what this thing would even be, because
do you want to be the hero for resurrecting the sinking ship? Is that what he wants?
Like, I'm under the impression that the whole thing was kind of an embarrassing piss off for Jared Leto, who put so much thought into it, at least from his perspective, and then wasn't in the film. And you can't imagine it did much for Will Smith or and, I mean, I'm sure Joel Kinnaman will be happily fucking do it again.
And Scott Eastwood for his barely credited role as henchman number 4.
But it wasn't a good experience for Delevingne. Everyone gave her shit. So it's like, who's this for? So it needs to be... I guess that's the thing. It needs to be bold. Whatever they do needs to be so bold and so, like... oh, okay, if you're going to put this person in control, then maybe I'm interested again. Mm. So, you know, maybe that'll work. Who knows? And the other thing, a follow-up to something we talked about before, we talked about the new Doctor Who will need to be announced at some point, probably a while away, to be fair. We said it was definitely time for a female Doctor Who.
Mm.
And London bookies, apparently, are putting odds on a female Doctor Who. But it's the kind of female Doctor Who that you don't have. You have when you're not having a female Doctor Who. They picked a character or an actress known for playing a lot of androgynous roles.
Mm.
And that is Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, which would be fantastic. Mm. I'd love Tilda Swinton to do that. But we do need to keep in mind that bookies are not doing this with any inside knowledge. They're picking names out of the air.
Mm.
Bookies, yeah. Generally, bookies don't have a huge amount of, you know...
They've got, like, a cigarette butt in the mouth. They've got the flat cap.
Yeah.
Got the hands in their pockets, looking at the eyes darting around shiftily. Pretty much.
Yeah.
But I thought it was worth mentioning just because that's an interesting name that we didn't mention, and I thought it was worth bringing up and discussing, seeing what you, the listener, thinks, as if we're going to even know or care. But, yeah, I thought that was interesting, and I think, you know, you go, well, does Tilda Swinton want to do that? Like, has she got better things to do? But then...
It'd be a decent pay packet for, you know, 2 years or whatever that she does it. And she can do movies in the off time. And
the film she does at the moment, she has a lot of fun roles, but I can't imagine them paying much.
Mm.
Plus, if you can get a cut on that merchandise, then, you know, and it's that merchandise goes well beyond years. It's like they're not going to stop making David Tennant or Tom Baker or...
Mm, and that's the thing, like, imagine Tilda Swinton dolls. Imagine how many people are going to buy Tilda Swinton dolls.
Like, I would imagine it will, and almost everybody would have
Have
one, at least one in their house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It would be like a TV.
Mm.
Like, just, you know, you wouldn't think twice.
Where have you put your Tilda today? Oh, yeah. Over here on the windowsill.
Oh, you've got your Tilda over there. We keep ours in the fridge to keep it moist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm. See, it's Brave New World.
There we go. Now... let's talk about our feature film review, The Great Wall.
Boobies. Boobies, according to Jodie.
Moofies. So, you came out of this, and what I love about seeing you come out of this film is I've known you for quite a while now.
Yep.
Haven't seen a whole lot of expressions. haven't seen a lot of enthusiasm for anything.
Yeah. I'm just such a big fan of Wer, though, that I just take on his, you know, lifestyle choices in my whole life.
I'm a bit of a fadster. I'm easily manipulated. I come out of things going, oh, I'm so excited about this thing. And you go, yeah. Might roll your eyes a little bit. Might scowl at me.
Yeah, it takes a lot for me to find joy in something.
Occasionally you'll hiss.
Mm.
But today was a different story. You came out of this pretty chuffed. So why don't you get the ball rolling, the big fiery catapulted ball rolling on the Great Wall?
Yeah, so you've probably seen a lot of, I guess, controversy surrounding the White Wall.
That's what I've heard.
Accusations of whitewashing and white savior storylines and all of that kind of thing. And I know a lot of people are choosing not to go and see this movie on the back of that. So, in this movie, you two kind of... at the start, main-ish characters are Matt Damon and Pedro Pascal from Game of Thrones or Narcos or whatever you've seen him in. And they stumble across this army at the Great Wall and kind of join them in fighting these monsters who are trying to fuck everybody up.
And to be fair, and we're going to talk some very minor story spoilers, but I think you're not going to this for story. This isn't going to surprise you or... twist. This is all about the experience.
Mm.
So,
I guess we'll start off by saying, was this a whitewashing movie?
No, because they, the Chinese characters, which is 95% of the movie, are very much in control of the situation. Yeah.
And I mean, whitewashing in that Matt Damon's character was never going to be a Chinese actor because he and Pedro Pascal are playing Europeans who have come over to China to trade for gunpowder, and they get caught up in all of this stuff.
Yeah, and not even really trade. They're coming in
to steal, but they come in under the guise of traders. They're kind of rogues.
Yeah. So the idea of... so if you're going, well, why are these white people in this movie? That makes no sense. When you realise they're there to steal culture...
Yeah.
you go, that makes perfect sense. That's what white people do. They go and invade other people's countries and try and steal their cool stuff they invented and then claim it as their own.
Yeah.
So that is exactly what's happening.
Yes.
So for me, it was more like, you know, like Warcraft or something where the orc ends up working with the alliance there.
Yeah.
You know, it was that kind of thing. They were sort of enemies and captured, but then they end up being useful.
And essentially, you know, the white person having people, having things explained to him by the people that he's now with is how we learn about things as the audience.
But they're never the total savior. And in terms of the actual cool character introductions and really building up a character and going, look at this person, aren't they awesome? It's actually the Chinese characters that get that. The white people are dirty, hairy, and sort of stumble in, as opposed to getting these grand entrances.
Yeah, I mean, there is...
our heroes get.
I can't say it is completely without white savior elements. He does have kind of like, oh, guys, how about we do this? And he does have a lot of that sort of thing, where he has the ideas that the Chinese characters don't. But ultimately, at the end of the day, he's not the one that wins the day.
Well, the army has a lot of really fucking great ideas, too. I mean, when you look at their setup, that's the thing that is really impressive. So this is a Chinese director, mostly a Chinese cast.
Yes.
But it is a Western production by the look of it. A lot of the... it's a joint production, but I notice a lot of the primary and the credits producers and story people and everything were Western.
Yeah.
And animators and things. Max Brooks was credited as one of the story people. And he's been dishing out a lot of crap. I'm going to say straight away that this film is definitely, for me, style over substance. There's nothing in this script or story that is going to wow you.
It's kind of like the Battle of Helm's Deep for 2.5 hours.
Or that Game of Thrones episode where they defend the wall from the White Walkers or something like that. But the style is fucking amazing. It's a beautiful film. And it's so good as well to see a fantasy film like this with...
where everything is so developed. Like, this army has multiple different units, and every time they battle, it's almost like you see a different unit that you never saw before. And even the beasts that they're fighting against were even so much more developed than I expected them to be, like their communication and their hierarchy and their intelligence and all of that kind of thing. You don't spend a heap of time with them, but the way they get that information across is very economical and really good.
Because although there's no memorable lines, no memorable bits of dialogue, it's not going to make you think about anything. In the same way, you kind of get away with that to a degree, I think, with this Chinese, like ancient Chinese army, because the idea is that they have this sort of distance about them. They're not there to do obnoxious one-liners or make... they're in a very serious situation.
Yeah, they're not here to make friends. They have a mission to defend the wall.
They're keeping that distance. Yeah. So I didn't mind that so much. Like you said, I think their setup was amazing. Their costumes are amazing. They all have distinct roles. My favorite definitely being Crane Corps, which is these blue armor clad, shiny blue armor, sort of almost Power Rangy, but with that sort of feudal thing about them.
They're a battalion of women.
They're all women because of their weight, essentially, and their agility.
Yeah, and they make a joke about that later, because you think, why is this all women? And they go, oh, he's a man. Are they going to be able to lift him back up?
Yeah, these women are basically like gymnasts, and they get off the top of the wall with these long spears, and they bungee down and stab things, and then bungee back up.
Yes, and they're led by Commander Jin, who is fucking amazing.
Yeah, so she's the
lady... oh, Commander Lin, sorry, not Jin.
Yeah, Commander Lin, played by Tiang Jing.
Yeah.
And she is the lead.
She is, she's... yeah, it's her and Matt Damon are the main characters in this movie.
And she's sort of the real hero of it in a lot of ways as well. I just had a ton of fun.
I really recommend it in IMAX 3D. It is the way to watch this film. It is so colourful, so beautiful. Like, every frame is just a feast for the eyes. And there's a bit towards the end where they're in this stained glass tower that is fucking amazing. And honestly, I can't remember the last time I left a film feeling such fucking joy. Like, I had pretty high expectations for this movie. I guess expectations within limits. I mean, I know this is a joint Western-Eastern movie, and so it's going to have definitely a lot of the Chinese elements, and then it's going to have a couple of, you know, the cheesy sort of Western elements as well. But it met everything that I expected. It was just 100% what I wanted it to be, what I expected it to be, and I literally could not be happier with this movie for me.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. It was way better than I was expecting, and I had a big sort of idiot grin on my face a lot of the time, yeah. Just going, oh, I love this idea, or I love this image. It was like, for me, reading just that sort of rush you get reading a really cool comic.
Yeah.
And I mean cool in the sense where you're just like going, oh, you know, this is a sort of rehashed action adventure story, but at the same time, like, the art and the ideas and the design is just so strong.
Yeah.
That I'm loving it. I almost felt like, I kept thinking of it, and I think it was the colour. It almost reminded me, design-wise, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, of Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Just of, like, thinking of that Naboo sort of coloured armour and things like that. And even that idea of that sort of hive mind army where you have to take out the core.
Yeah.
And I wonder what the... it just got me thinking about that sort of chicken and egg kind of thing where you think of all the influences that Lucas would have had to develop that aesthetic. And then you think, there's got to be a lot of filmmakers that sort of grew up with that sort of stuff as well. And how does that get filtered through into completely different new things?
Yeah.
So there was something about that colour, which I really loved. I think it made it very unique to the film. And that rainbow thing you're talking about was sort of the culmination of that where... you know, you went, oh, this is such a different aesthetic to, especially after sitting through trailers for things like Underworld, which are just so drab, and then going, this is this really nice, big, colourful fantasy movie. Probably reminded me most of all of something like Warcraft and the way I felt about that. And it's
in the way that it's not going to be for everybody, but if it's for you, it's really for you.
And it's not hard to see how, like, Warcraft would be very popular in China if this is the sort of movie they're producing. So let's dig a little bit deeper. That's what I would say, sort of springboard off what you're saying there, is that we saw this in IMAX 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So we paid like $30-odd a ticket.
Yep.
And that's what we did on our Saturday morning. Now, I think that this movie, if you're someone that's really balks at paying $30 a ticket, that you don't see movies very often, and you aren't the sort of person that's going to spend 2 hours watching something that's style over substance, then no, you're not going to enjoy it. Like, I wouldn't even bother.
There's not a heap of character development. The plot is thin. And yeah, you do need to go into it knowing that. And if those are things that you can't get past, then, you know.
Because that's sort of where I'm at. And I'm at this with the whole sort of pop culture, movie, fan, nerd, whatever, however you want to phrase it. And I'm putting ourselves in that category as well. That they're becoming so difficult to please. And every time I talk to anyone, there's just such overwhelming negativity.
Mm-hmm.
That although I had a great time, I can just see how people would want to attack this and not enjoy it. And I was kind of talking about this a bit at the quiz night with our friends when we were talking about movies, because, you know, obviously the prequels came up, so everybody has to couch that, oh, I've only seen this so many times, or this is awful, or this is horrible, or I think this was... And it's, for me, it's like, well, we have to stop talking about movies like they're horrible massacres or terrorist attacks and stuff. Like, the way people go, oh, that was just the most horrible piece of shit. Mm-hmm. And they use all the hyperbole and they talk about... And I just think, like, one, it's such a dead end. It's dead end as criticism. Like, if I'm reading a review now, and I understand the, like, want to be snarky and kind of clever and stuff, and I probably used to do that in my reviews a lot as well. But I think the minute you start with the hyperbole, I'd rather have fucking fish hooks stuck in my bum than... You know, then you've lost me already, because you're not telling me anything about this film. You know, you're not teaching me anything. You're not increasing my understanding. And I'm noticing this as well, especially on podcasts and stuff and YouTube things I watch. There was a guy recently I was listening to, and he mentioned the Super Mario Brothers movie, which of course is like a bad movie. But he was like, oh, it's such a horrible piece of shit. I'm trying my best. I'm trying to shut it out of my mind and pretend that I never... saw it and go, and it's almost this thing where it's like trying, not just trying to be cool, but like really trying to fit in or trying to impress someone. And I think, like, yeah, that's a really fucking weird movie, but it's far more interesting to talk about it for what it actually is than just go that, what a piece of shit route. Because, I mean, you look at it, what a weird fucking hybrid of a film. Like, the fact that it even exists and that it has, like, Bob Hoskins and stuff. Like, there is so much fun to talk about there. And it's a movie worth seeing as well. It's not worth seeing more than once, but it's, you know, like, if you're a film fan, like, what a fucking adventure. You're going to have fun watching mm-hmm. that thing and just going, how is this happening? But to then be like, you know, it fucking raped my childhood or whatever. It's just crazy to me. Like, I've said it before, movies we should treat like ice cream flavors. And it's fine sometimes to go, oh, yeah, look, I tried that and that's really not for me. I really do not like that flavor. I'm not going back there again.
But you're not going to go and pick at the ice cream store and stop other people from trying that flavor.
And you're not going to be talking about it like for the next 2 years or three years or, well, in terms of like Phantom Menace or something, like 20 years. You know what I mean? Like the way that people just keep harping on it for approval, you know? And even then, even if you had like ice cream that was fucking like chicken and chocolate flavored, you might go, oh, like, isn't it more pleasurable to go, that was weird. Like, sometimes I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. Other times I was like, oh, shit. But it was an adventure eating it, you know? Wouldn't eat it again, but glad I tried it. So I just wish we could temper, because we're talking about films. We're not talking about, like, mass shootings or anything like that.
Yeah.
So everybody, you know, so if you're someone that kind of agrees with that sentiment, then I reckon this is a really fun experience.
Yeah, honestly, if you're listening to what we're saying and it kind of sounds interesting to you, then do not miss this movie in IMAX. Don't see this 2 years down the line and think, oh shit, I would have actually really liked to have seen that massive and in 3D. Don't miss your chance. Do it now. I am going to go and see it again. 100%. If you're
the sort of person that saw Fantastic Beasts and went, I don't think the CGI was very good, like, don't see this. Go in the bathroom, fill up the sink with water, close the door, put your head in the sink, completely under.
Maybe throw the hairdryer in there too, if you're feeling particularly cranky about it.
Because, like, I mean, why would you even be listening to this? Like, because you listen to us more than you would, you know, spend time watching these movies, and there's some good stuff out there.
Yeah, and I think the other point, like, if people are thinking, oh, well, they're going to, you know, boycott it because of the whitewashing claims and that sort of thing, I think the thing that this has shown is that a lot of the Chinese people involved with this movie, so the director and the actors and all of those sorts of people, have come out and said, hey, no, look, like, this is, the decisions that were in this movie were made for a reason and we're fine with it. But it's all white people going, no, this is very offensive and you should be offended by that. And I think that's quite arrogant of white people to tell Chinese people what they need to be offended by.
I think it's marketing too. Like, I sort of felt that in that first trailer, that, like, Matt Damon Saves the World trailer.
Yeah, but then when if you watch the... teaser.
I know, and then since that wasn't the case.
If you watch the Dragon Blade trailer, which is John Cusack, Adrian Brody, which is actually a Jackie Chan movie, the trailer is literally just John Cusack and Adrian Brody. If you watch that trailer, you'd go, oh, that's a movie with only them in it. Yeah, and it's not like that at all.
Which is a fault of the marketing, which is, again, a chicken and egg thing, because they're going, well, that's what an audience needs in order to connect with this.
Yeah. Honestly, if having Matt Damon in a movie like this is what gets it IMAX 3D so that I can watch it and enjoy it in this way, then put Matt Damon in fucking everything.
But I just don't think the average person digs deep with this stuff. Like, they don't understand who's directing something or who's producing something or who's putting on or what the story is behind a film or even who half the actors are.
Yeah. And
they take
even
things very face value from what they see. They don't dig how we would dig in order to do the show. So
yeah. And I mean, like, it's not like Chinese movies that do feature 100% Chinese cast. It's not like they're not on at the cinemas. They are. They are there and you can go and watch them if you really want to see an all Asian cast. But the truth is, no one does. I mean, like, the League of Gods that we reviewed last week, that was on at the cinema here, like, last either September or November. It probably made about $100.
Yeah. And we don't think about the way that we, like, I get very frustrated with mainstream sort of conversation about films, because I think people don't address problems in the right way. Like, I'm thinking of a situation I had recently where a very educated and man who I respect a lot was complaining about Keira Knightley not being able to act. And you know, when someone says someone can't act, it always frustrates me.
It means they've only seen one movie.
Yeah,
if they're in movies
you can act. It's more about the direction and the project and all that sort of stuff. And he said in Love Actually how she just is a piece of wood and she just kills it, and he can't stand watching it in there. And I was thinking about it and I thought, well, what the fuck has she got to do in that film? Mm. Like, what has she got to do compared to what Bill Nye's got to do, mm-hmm. or Alan Rickman's got to do, or Liam Neeson's got to do? They're carrying so much more weight. And
yeah. She's just literally the pretty girlfriend.
Who's the object of a, who you want the guy to win as a prize at the end. And you think, I felt this last year when, before we saw those last lot of Oscar movies like Jackie and La La Land, I was going, what's the female performance that I really loved? Like, I could pick out things like Ben Foster in Hell or High Water. Mm. But well, and then you realize once you see Emma Stone or Natalie Portman that, oh, they've got stuff to do. They've got a conduit with which to act. They've got a character which has emotions and has a range of things. And, yeah, of course they can do it when it's there.
Mm.
But instead of, like, bemoaning female roles or people of colour roles or whatever, we get stuck in going, seeing them do it, the shitty role that a fucking white man wrote for them where they've got nothing to do and going, and then denigrating them, saying, oh, they're not talented.
Mm.
And it's like, well, what fucking chance did they have? Like, what are they going to do with that script? Like, how would you make that role memorable? Who would you replace Keira Knightley with where that suddenly would be, oh, no, that person's fantastic? It's like, you know, I've seen that with the Scarlet podcast. When she's playing the sexy femme fatale person, it's always the worst because there's nothing to do there. And they don't utilize her and they don't get, like, but when it's a more multifaceted, interesting, or even playing against type or playing that sort of more tomboyish thing that I think she's more comfortable with, suddenly it works. So you got to look at where the blame is. One other thing I want to say about Great Wall, we know we're going on about this a lot, but we don't have much left to say about anything else. What I loved about it, and this ties into it, and there's a minor spoiler, but you don't know how or when or why, but really the female character, Commander Lynn, she gets to save the day. And she gets to save Matt Damon as well. So if
she saves everybody, because she's the best.
But she literally physically, like, grabs him and holds on to him. And that's something you don't see very often. And if you're certainly worried about this being all about Matt Damon, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a big deal. It shouldn't even be worth noticing. That sort of thing should just happen if it's in the story. And she was the one with experience and everything. But I was watching after, because, you know, I'm following all this, like, fucking Trump stuff every day.
Yeah.
I was watching the new Celebrity Apprentice with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Uh-huh. And do you know who Brooke Burke is?
No.
She's a model and TV presenter and stuff, getting, like, things. But she's got a partner. I think his name's David Chevalier. He's from Baywatch.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Yeah.
So they had to do this campaign for Kawasaki showing this motorbike that was for everybody.
Yeah.
And it was about inclusivity, and it was for men, it was for women, it was people of all shapes and sizes. So Carson from Queer Eye did this wonderful thing where he did this photo shoot with this magnificent drag queen on it and these other things. She's like, well, I'll call David, my husband, we'll get him in here, and he can be on the back of the bike with me riding it.
Okay.
And he turns up, and he's just like, no, babe, I'm not getting on the back of that bike. There is no way I'm getting on the back with you on the front. And he says, like, I don't want to look like a wimp in front of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he's like, it just wouldn't happen in real life. He's like, I would never get on. No one would get on the back of a bike with a woman. And she's like, oh, no, there's men that would. And he goes, yeah, well, that's a dumb man. Like, no one would do that. And he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it for this exercise. And they gave her a hard time in the boardroom and said, I think if that picture had been different, you know, you would have done that. And she's saying to Schwarzenegger, oh, but you wouldn't ride on the back. And he's like, yeah, of course I would.
Hmm.
Absolutely. And she's like, you'd ride on the back of the bike with me? And he's like, yeah, sure. Like,
yeah, I'm not a dickhead.
I'm not worried. Yeah. And it was kind of chilling.
BT dubs, mate. Yeah. Your husband's a dickhead.
It was kind of, like, chilling to me. I don't know. It's funny when you think about those things that, like, that there are people that actually spend mental energy in their day thinking about being a man, what is it to be a man, and I've got to be manly. And apparently, you know, he got support on Twitter from people going, you know, all these fembots saying this and this, why can't men be men, and why can't we have traditional things? And you think, with the way our society is so fucking, like, soft, and I don't mean in a kind of, oh, nanny state way, I just mean in the way that we've solved a lot of problems. Like, we don't have to club animals for food, and we're all pretty comfortable and catered for. It's not meant, you don't, like, I can't even think of any sort of, beyond reproduction, any biological sort of prerogative to be a man.
And even then,
there are plenty of people that are men who have no biological reproduction impulses whatsoever, including myself.
I read a story on Facebook, I think. It was kind of one of those overheard sort of things. And the lady was saying she was at Krispy Kreme or some sort of donut shop, and a guy was coming in to buy a box of mixed donuts, and the kid behind the counter was like, "Oh, what sort do you want?" He's like, "Oh, I don't really care. I don't mind. Just give me donuts." And then he went, "Oh, well, keep in mind it's for a whole lot of grown men, so no, like, sprinkles or anything." Are you not allowed to have sprinkles as a man?
I heard a guy on, God, I think it was Improv for Humans. I don't know who it was. It was a male comedian, and he was doing a bit about, like, with his kids, wanting to build Lego and stuff, and him, like, not understanding. I don't understand the instructions. I can't do that. They all want it to be perfect. They, like, isn't it like Lego? You can't you do just whatever you want? Like, why does every little bit have to put... And I'm thinking, like, you are a grown man trying to be cool and funny by boasting about
your how stupidity.
You can't do a really simple thing.
That children can do.
Yeah. And he was, like, being serious about that. Like, this wasn't one of the improv bits. He was just, like, sort of doing it like, oh, you know, can't we all just fuck it? And it's... Yeah, it's like, well, that's why that trumps your president.
Together, Grimace... We could own this town.
Reap what you sow.
Grab him by the pussy.
So, yeah, do we want to talk about these other... We've got a couple of other films that we saw as minor things.
Oh, God, let's just do it.
Just do it? All right, yeah. Tell us about The Rooftop.
All right, so The Rooftop, in our quest for, you know, watching other films of other voices, which at the moment just seem to be just Chinese movies, but I'm sure we'll branch out eventually.
It's a gateway.
Yeah. Rooftop is an interesting film. It's a bit of a vanity project for Taiwanese pop star slash actor Jay Chou, who you may have seen in Green Hornet or Now You See Me 2, which, you know, we're talking about people of colour being in white people movies, though he was pretty cool in Green Hornet, to be fair.
Fucking great in Green Hornet. He's amazing.
I want him to be in more Hollywood movies, but yeah, we will see. So The Rooftop is... Again, I'm not super educated in Chinese movies, so I think I did miss a lot of references, but it's kind of a big love letter to really old school Chinese movies. So, like, big sets, musical numbers, and kind of over-the-top drama and stuff like that. He wrote it, he produced it, he wrote all the songs for it, he did, like, everything, and stars in it, obviously, as well. And, it's just kind of fun. It's really fun and different, and I had a really good time with it. The last sort of 20 minutes takes a bit of a weird turn. Tonally, it shifts and kind of doesn't feel like the rest of the movie, but there's just all these sequences where they're just doing these crazy things in, like, bowling alleys, and he plays a... just kind of a sort of street ruffian guy who sort of wears headbands and is, like, cool and has his car that he drives around in. And he gets caught up in this movie production that's being filmed sort of locally, and he joins it as a stuntman, meets the lead actress, and kind of falls in love with her, even though he shouldn't, because he's, like, you know, the tramp, and she's the lady in a Lady and the Tramp kind of situation. And, yeah, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
When is it set?
It's kind of like a fantasy. It's okay. Almost like...
It looked like the 90s. Does it look sort of 90s or
80s? No. Well, it was made in, like, 2013, I think. But it's not really set in any particular time. Yeah. It's just like... Yeah, it's just there's certain elements which I would say were a bit Baz Luhrmann-y, but that Baz Luhrmann had probably ripped off Chinese stuff from 30 years ago kind of thing. But, yeah, worth a look. Probably more if you are a Jay Chou fan. There's not... Maybe you're not a lot else if you're not.
It's a deeper cut.
It's a bit of a deeper cut, but I am a Jay Chou fan. There was meant to be a wax model of him at Madame Tussauds in Singapore, and I was very... Like, I was so excited. I'd seen this picture on the website. I was like, we're going to Madame Tussauds. Going to have a picture with Jay Chou. This is going to be the highlight of my trip. And I came around the corner into, like, the Asian celebrity section, and they'd replaced him with two Koreans. He had to put two Koreans to replace one Jay Chou, and I was devastated.
Wax Jay Chou.
Mm-hmm.
Did you snuff his wick?
No, he wasn't there.
Okay, that's true. That's a crucial part of that story that I ignored. So I saw Silence. I'm only going to talk about this very briefly, which seems weird because it's like a new Scorsese film. And it's like, oh, why would you just casually mention that? But this is the one where the two missionaries go to Japan to try and find their old mentor, played by Liam Neeson, and have brought sort of religion to Japan, like Christianity to Japan. And yeah, look, it's one of those movies. It's 3 hours long. It's beautifully shot, as you can imagine. It's definitely like a quality production, as you would expect. But it just didn't resonate with me. It's fine. It's good. Like, I liked it. I think I gave it a better than average score, if for example. Yeah. But it just hasn't lingered with me at all. And I think it's because basically the sort of message boils down to, hey, maybe we shouldn't be trying to push Jesus onto Japan. Because maybe it's not for them.
Maybe they don't need it.
Yeah, and I kind of knew that already. I don't know if I needed 3 hours to tell me that we shouldn't go around, like, sticking Jesus up
where
people.
It doesn't belong.
Yeah. So that was a bit of an issue. The other thing was it stars Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Which is quite promising at the beginning, because you've got, like, Kieran Hines as some sort of, you know, bishop-y dude going, you know what, it's pretty dangerous to go to Japan, because they're cracking down on Christianity. Yep. Like, if they find people in power, if they find out, you're fucked. And they're like, if I were you, I wouldn't go. And then you're looking at Garfield and Driver, who are two intense motherfuckers, who are like, yeah, we're going. And he's like, I wouldn't if I were you. And they're like, no, we're gonna do this. And they're like, it's dangerous. And they're like, we don't give a fuck. We're going there. Mm. We're gonna stick Jesus up their fucking bums.
We're gonna wrestle some fucking tanukis and shove Jesus everywhere. Jesus, they don't want him to be
all up in there. Here's some Jesus. Jesus is everywhere. Oh, he's in your face. Oh, look, I just found him in your ear. Jesus is everywhere.
He's dribbling out your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing the Gordon Ramsay thing, holding two pieces of bread on
the
side of
it. What are you, a Jesus sandwich?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Garfield's in it more than Driver. And, I don't know. They're doing accents as well. Yeah. Like, and I don't think it's an accident that you're not hearing any Oscar buzz about them for this movie. Yeah, it just feels odd. Feels like, why are these guys doing it?
Was it based on a true story or anything?
Oh, probably a true history.
Okay.
You know, things that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine all this happened. I don't know, like, if, you know, this Liam Neeson guy went off and did this stuff. Probably did. Like, sure. It's based on a novel.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I don't know why they'd put lies in a novel.
Is it a fiction novel?
Oh, well, I didn't borrow it from the library. I don't know. Couldn't tell you. I don't know what section it's in. I don't know the Dewey number. But yeah, it can be a fiction novel based on historical events. That's how complicated libraries are and the whole book process. That's why
that's why I don't go to libraries
anymore.
That's
why I watch movies. Let this book learning, let that be for somebody else. And so that was all that. That's what we saw. We haven't caught up on the next episode of Legion yet, so no television news. But just very, very quickly.
Video games.
There are more Pokemon released in Pokemon 2 Go.
Yeah.
Which you knew if you're a Pokemon Go fan.
Unless you haven't played for a couple of months, which I think a lot of people are probably in that boat.
Yeah,
so
I haven't.
If you haven't, update your app, go out hunting all the new Pokemans. And I don't know any of their names, so I have to learn all these names again.
Well, you've just been calling them, you've been calling Sentret Zero Rabbit.
Yeah, well, it's because Suzanne said you guys call it Zero Rabbit.
I don't call it Zero Rabbit. I call it Sentret. Because I know my fucking Pokemon
briefly.
And
the other one was like Hatbird.
Murkrow.
Yeah, Hatbird.
And I got Marill, Pussy Mouse.
You
saw him. And I've got Hoot Hoot. That's like Spring Owl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And and I got a Totodile.
I evolved my Eevee into the Black Witchy one.
The Black Witchy one?
Yeah. So there's like, you know, the black one with the yellow on it and the red eyes or whatever.
Oh, that's like Umbreon.
Sure.
I think.
I don't know.
Stop talking about this, because if anyone's a Pokemon fan, you're going to be pissing blood out of their face.
Yeah, there's if you search for it, you can find what the names are to name your Eevee so that you can do them. There's two new evolutions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to have a look and see if I've got enough Eevee candy to evolve that little bugger.
There's like new little fruits and shit as well.
Holy
you get like
shit.
Pineapples that'll give you more candy when you catch the little bugger.
And make the Pokemon semen taste better. You see the look I'm getting? right now.
Mm.
Sort of, how would I describe it?
Keep talking. That doesn't even make sense.
I would like to fuck you into the middle of next week.
I pressed the wrong one. I was actually going for that. But just as good.
Bullshit art test!
That was me. That was me putting an end to this bullshit.
To this tumfuckery. All right. Well, look, I think that's the show.
I would say that is a fair show. I think
it's a pretty solid show.
Yes.
That's a good show. So thank you very much for listening. You can find out everything that we do at fruitlesspursuits.com, including links to the Book Was Better podcast, which has come back. Last week was Rambo. The week before was B-movie. I'm going to say what it is this week.
Okay.
As a special treat for IFP listeners. It will be Basic Instinct.
Ooh, sexy.
With Lizzie Unpronounceable. Should be a classic fun. BWB episode. So that should be a lot of fun. You'll also find links to our iTunes. I did check them the other day. Nobody had given us a 5-star review and suggested a sound for us to add to the soundboard. So
you're all jerks.
Fuck you. And also links to our Facebook group where we do talk about things. We post pictures. We chat to you, the listener. And everybody just has an absolutely wonderful time.
Mm.
And that's it.
That's it.
Hiddle piddle.
Whittle, whittle,
whittle. Hopefully we'll have that sound grab next week. So in the meantime...
There won't be another Camelot. Not another Camelot.
Camelot.